Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Welcome back to The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick. In Myanmar now, where the military's crackdown on the Rohingya is being called an ethnic cleansing, propped up by modern-day concentration camps. The Rohingya are a Muslim minority in Myanmar, and more than 400,000 Rohingya have fled to neighboring Bangladesh since the end of August. Myanmar appeared to be heading toward a more democratic future with the election of Nobel Prize winner Aung San Suu Kyi as national leader in 2016. Suu Kyi is now facing criticism, though, for failing to intervene in this persecution, and she's not expected to attend the UN General Assembly this week in New York. But that new democracy in Myanmar could also be part of the problem here. That's according to Nicholas Kristof, author and columnist for The New York Times. Nick visited Myanmar in 2015 to report on the situation with the Rohingya, and he joins me now. Nick, welcome back to The Takeaway.
Good to be back with you.
When you were in Myanmar in 2015, you saw the conditions there, you saw the camps, and I know you're following the situation now, Nick. Describe some of those conditions, the health conditions, the food and water, and the situation that people are living under.
So essentially, the Rohingya have been locked up either in quasi-concentration camps if they're in more urban areas, or confined to their villages if they're in more rural areas. And that means that they cannot go out to school, and most importantly, that they can't get medical care. So if a woman is in obstructed labor, then she cannot go to a hospital to get a C-section, or cannot easily. There occasionally are some provisions, but in general, she cannot get outside medical help. And humanitarian groups have also been pretty much blocked from providing support for the Rohingya. And so you have crushing mortality and other really desperate conditions. And then it's on top of that, you've had the latest crackdown and villages burned, this kind of thing.
Yeah, we've seen news photographs and reports recently of villagers, Rohingya villagers, watching from across fields while entire villages burn. Is that widespread?
You know, nobody is allowed in Rakhine State where this is happening. And our only real information comes from a combination of interviews with Rohingya refugees who have fled, and also from satellite images that show villages burning. But every bit of information we get suggests that the Myanmar military has systematically gone through and burned villages, in some cases slaughtered inhabitants, raped women. The Myanmar military itself is now estimated that almost 40% of the Rohingya villages have been completely abandoned. This is a major population in this part of Burma, and they are fleeing because of this systematic ethnic cleansing undertaken by the Myanmar military, and of course, all unfolding under a Nobel Peace Prize winner.
I want to play you some sound, Nick, from your trip in Myanmar. This is Yu Win Myang, a state government spokesman, when you asked him about the plight of the Rohingya.
The first thing I want to say is when you are here in our state, don't use the word Rohingya. There's no such thing as the Rohingya ethnicity in our country.
Nick Kristof, here's a government spokesperson that you talked to saying flat out that the Rohingya ethnicity doesn't even exist in the first place.
The ethnic cleansing and brutality towards the Rohingya is based on denial of their rights, but also denial of their existence. And it's kind of staggering that even Aung San Suu Kyi doesn't use the word Rohingya. It makes it very hard to have a conversation with Myanmar officials about it. The Myanmar government claims that these are relatively recent illegal immigrants from Bangladesh. They call them Bengalis. And this is just a completely false narrative. There are ancient accounts from the 18th century, for example, that show that the Rohingya were already well established at that time. The notion that they are illegal immigrants in recent decades is just preposterous, but that is used as a way to deny them citizenship, deny them rights.
Nick, the world celebrated the election of Aung San Suu Kyi in Myanmar in 2016 and the democratic reforms that came along with it. There were benefits from the United States and other Western democracies that came along with that. But you've said that these democratic reforms have fueled some of the ethnic hatreds and may have made this situation worse. Why did you say that?
It's really sad to see the evolution of democracy in Myanmar in some ways. The old fault line was between those who had supported the military dictatorship and those who were supporting democracy. And by that fault line, then the forces of democracy were and human rights were triumphant. But increasingly, the fault line in politics in Myanmar is about how much do we hate Muslim minorities, especially the Rohingya. And that has empowered the darkest forces in Myanmar. And I think that it's one reason why Aung San Suu Kyi has been on the wrong side of this. I mean, my take is that she genuinely does see many of the Rohingya as troublemakers and in some cases as illegal immigrants. But I also think that she has moved from being this incredible human rights icon to a pragmatic politician, and that she knows that if she were to speak up for this enormously unpopular minority, that it would hurt her political party. And I think that's a factor in not just her silence, but she has actively been defending and what is going on, which is just so painful for all of us who so admired Aung San Suu Kyi.
Is the United States the country that could put a stop to this, or are there other countries as well?
I think it'll take a global pressure. But the U.S., this would be a really important place for the U.S. to exercise real leadership, partly because the U.S. was so important in bringing Myanmar out of the cold under the Obama administration, partly because Suu Kyi cares very, very deeply about her relationship with the U.S., because the Myanmar military has been rebuilding ties with the U.S. And so I think that while the entire world and regional powers matter a great deal, I think this is a place for U.S. leadership, and so far we have not seen that.
Nicholas Kristof, author and columnist for The New York Times. Nick, thanks for being with us again.
Good to be with you, Todd.